Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 23rd, 2001. In the Creekside Room is Catherine Cummings Bond. Today's session number is CUC 2001-04, and it's titled Harriet Tubman. Let's listen in.
Teach us about courage and strength, whether we are men or women at whatever age. One of the things that's curious to me about all the women I do is they all live into their 80s or 90s. And if you think about a slave woman living into her 80s, especially this one, Harriet, it's incredible given all the stressors on her life. But she just had this indomitable spirit. What we're going to do this morning is Bryn will be telling the story of Harriet as a child whose name was Minty. And Minty, they gave children a basket name. Am I stealing your thunder?
No, go for it.
And as long as they were in the basket, and then when they got to be older, young teenagers, they got a name. And I will take it from the time Minty goes to Harriet. So please meet Harriet Tubman.
Good morning. My name is Minty. I was born in 1820 or 1822. I'm not quite sure when, and I'll tell you why. It's because in those days, they believed that slaves' births weren't important enough to be recorded. So I was never quite sure when my birthday was, although I had a pretty good idea of my age. I was born right outside the Chesapeake Bay, which is very close to what you know now as Washington, D.C. I was also born on the Brodus Plantation, where my mother, Old Rit, and my father, Daddy Ben, raised me. I was born, and before I was six, I was able to run around and be a careless child, like any other child today. But when I turned 6 years old, I was officially a slave hand. And I brought water to the field hands, and I tended to the small corn and grain. When I was about seven, after a year of working on my plantation, the Brodus Plantation, I was sold out to a man named Mr. Cook. And that means that a white man went to my master, another white man, and paid money for me, and I had no choice but to go home with him, and do what he told me to do. So that's what I did. I said goodbye to my parents, knowing that I might not ever see them again. And I got in the buggy with this man, and I went home. And he introduced me to his wife, Mrs. Cook. And they told me that my job was to go out to the water every day and check the muskrat traps. And they gave me a big burlap sack, and I was supposed to open the muskrat trap. And if there was a muskrat in it, I was supposed to grab it by the tail and put it in the sack and bring it into them. Simple enough. But I never did it. I always came home empty-handed, even if there was a muskrat in the trap. And that's because I knew what it was like to be a slave, and I could never enslave anything else, not even a muskrat. So like I said, I always came back empty-handed, and for this I was punished severely. After a while of waiting in the water, I got really sick. But they didn't believe me. They said that slaves are always faking sick to get out of work. So they punished me when I acted sick. After a while, they realized that I truly was sick, and they had no other option but to bring me back to my parents on the Brodus Plantation. They knew if they didn't, I surely would die. So they did, and it took 6 weeks before I was well again. And when I was, and up and playing, and doing my original chores around the Brodus Plantation, they sent me back for a second time to the same family. But this time, they tried to keep me inside and teach me how to cook and sew, but I didn't want to learn. So I'd drop the thread on the floor or do things to aggravate Mrs. Cook. And it did aggravate her, surely. But they sent me back a second time to the Brodus Plantation, and this time they said that I was worthless and I would never amount to anything. But I knew better. I knew one day I'd be somebody special. So after about 2 years of being on the Brodus Plantation, after that, when I was about 10, I was sold out a third time to a different lady. Her name was Miss Susan, and she had a baby. My job was to tend to the baby. I'd sit on the floor and I'd rock the baby back and forth, and if the baby got upset, I was punished. I learned how to sleep without sleeping by the baby. I'd lay by the baby at night, and I'd be able to dream and nod like any other sleeping child, but I'd hear every noise that the baby made. Little did I know that this would help me a great deal in the future. One day, the baby was napping, and Miss Susan asked me to help her set the table. She asked me to put the sugar cubes on, or the sugar lumps on, and very rarely did I taste sugar. It was only once a year around Christmas, and every once in a while my mom would make a pie or something like that. And so I wanted so badly to stick my fingers in and just pop a lump in my mouth. And so I did, without thinking about it too much, and I hoped that she didn't see me, but she did. She told me to go outside and wait for a bean. So I went outside, but when she came out, I knew that I couldn't stand there and let her beat me one more time. I knew that I couldn't just stand there and put up with it, so I ran. I took off like a shot. I ran so fast that my legs should have fallen off, but they didn't. I kept running. It must have been 5 miles until I reached a barn. In the barn was fresh hay for me to sleep on, and piglets. And the piglets got slop every day, which was mostly just table scraps from the farmer or their master, which isn't much worse than what I had eaten my whole life. So I'd fight them off and ward them off to eat their slop that they got every day. But after a while, after a couple days, I knew that I couldn't survive like this. And I knew that my only option was to go back to Miss Susan's. And so I did, even though I knew and suffered the consequences.
When I was about 13 years old, I went to a corn shucking contest. I hear you're going to have some corn in Holden in a few days. And the way you get to eat corn is you shuck it. How many know how to shuck corn? All right, then, you'll understand the story. Well, the way this was done was they would have all the slaves gathered together, and all the white folks would cheer for their slaves, kind of like what you call a football game or whatever, and something like that. But we were shucking corn. I loved to go to these things because it was at the corn shucking contest that we got to see our family, the people we were separated from because we were slaves. We got to see our friends that we'd known, and they just separated us. In fact, they tried to separate families so they would work harder. So at this corn shucking contest, I was watching for some of the people on the edges because I heard tell of something. It was called the Underground Railroad. We never talked about it in a regular voice because it was the way you got free. I knew some things about it, but I knew it took a very brave person, and usually men, to go on the Underground Railroad. I saw one man who was watching. You could tell he was carefully watching, not talking very much at all. He was standing over in the side, and I thought he might know something about the Underground Railroad. So, I went over and stood next to him, and I just turned and I said very quietly, "Railroad," and he looked at me. He never said a word to me. But I could tell he was one of the kinds that would have done something courageous, like go on the railroad. Well, this would be a great time to do such because everyone was around and everyone was happy and no one was expecting you might do something. A few of the overseers, a few of the masters were watching you carefully. So he was standing right next to me, and all of a sudden there was a lot of cheering going on, and one of the masters was weighing a big amount of corn to see who had won. They was putting a weight on this side and there was corn on this side of the weight. And he was putting this 2-pound weight on, and this man next to me, sure enough, he took off like a shot. Well, the master saw him. He took this weight and threw it at him as hard as he could. Well, he didn't hit the man, he hit me right here. 14-year-old girl. I was pretty slender, and you can see I wasn't very big. I was about 5'2", and I went down on the ground, and blood came running, and my mama came up, and she picked me up, and she was a sobbing. She thought I would die. Certainly, people had died with less of an injury. She took me back to the slave quarters, and there she laid me on our bed, which was just a pallet. A couple pieces of wood put over the oozing mud with a quilt or two on top, and that was where we slept like a pile of puppies. Well, I lay there for 6 weeks. Sometimes I would open my eyes and there would be a crowd of folks from the quarter, all black folks, the elders of our community, would come to pray over me. God, save Minty. Save her, God, because you have important work to do through Minty. God, don't let her succumb to death. And I would come in and out of consciousness. And I remember seeing them. And when I was on my, what could have been a deathbed, I began to pray, God, change the heart of Mr. Brodus, because he was a very mean slave owner. Change his heart that he would not be so mean to us. And then I began to pray for something different. I began to pray that he just might die. Because we were promised that if he died, then we'd go free. And I wanted my mama and daddy to be free, and I wanted to be free more than anything in the world. Well, one morning, I could tell the sun was up, and I was more conscious this day than most. Someone came running through the quarters. The quarters were just little shacks, one rooms, and they were next to one another, and we shared together a lot of things. But they came running down, and they said, "He's dead! He's dead!" And I kind of woke up and sat up in bed, and I asked, "Who's dead?" And they said, "Mr. Brutus, he's died!" I thought my prayer's been answered. I thought I had caused our owner's death, and I was scared what that might mean. Well, it turned out that we got a new master, and he was a preacher man. And I thought, well, a preacher man is sure going to be a good person. Not necessarily. I guess that's true today, too. Well, anyway, he was meaner than Mr. Brodus. He was uglier and meaner and beat more people. Well, he sold my daddy and I out to some people across the street. And this was a stroke of luck, and I'll tell you why. My daddy was a hard worker, and he taught me how to be a hard worker. I could split a cord of wood in half a day. Do you know how much wood that is? Can any of you do that here?
No.
That's a lot of wood. Well, I could split it in half a day, and my pa and I, we'd have good conversations. He would say, well, I forgot to tell you something. My name had been changed. When I had not died and succumbed to death, the elders of the community thought that I was touched by God and I should have an honored name. And there was a great woman in our quarters named Harriet, so they named me Harriet. So I became from Minty to Harriet. So my father would say, "Harriet, if you go on the railroad, how are you going to know which way to go?" "I don't know, Pa. How would I know?" He goes, "You got to head north." And he would talk about up in the sky on clear nights like we have around here at Holden, there's a Big Dipper. And that looks like a gourd, because in the field, when we were thirsty, we would go and take a gourd and get a drink out of it for water. And so we sang a song called "Follow the Drinking Gourd." Well, he says, "Well, that's fine and good, Harry, on clear nights. What are you going to do when it's raining?" "Don't know, Pa. What am I going to do?" "Well, you're going to go to a tree," he said. "And you look at a tree, and you feel for it, and you feel where the moss is growing. Because the moss always grows on the north side." Well, that was helpful. And then he taught me, many days he would say, "I want you to work over here, and I want you, the whole time you're working, but for the swinging of your axe, I want you to be quiet. I want you to walk like a deer." So I learned how, over those times with my pa, to walk even on dried leaves without making a sound, because I would need that later. Well, my pa and I, we had good times because there were not an overseer over there, and we could talk and laugh and sing, and he taught me a lot about life. Well, when I was about 20, I fell in love with a man. His name was John Tubman. John Tubman had a laugh that made my heart sing. He was a sweet man, he was a kind man, and he was a freed man, and I liked all those things. He didn't live in the quarter. He lived across the road in a shack all by himself because he was a freed man. His overseer had let him go free. Well, when you fall in love and you're a slave, what you do is you make a quilt. And this is the quilt that I made my husband, John. Now, I told you I could swing that axe and do two cords of wood a day. But this here quilt took me 3 years to make. Now, it's not that good of a quilt, but my hands just didn't work that way. It was better for an axe than for... So this is the quilt I made him. So I made him, and on our wedding day, this was the present I gave him. It was the loveliest thing I ever made, was this quilt. So it went in our bed. About a couple weeks into us being married, I told John Tubman that someday I was going to be free like him. And he had the strangest response. He said to me, "Harry Tubman, if you run away, I'm going to run right to your master and tell him." I couldn't understand that response. To me, that was ultimate betrayal. Why would my husband, who was free, not want me to be free? And so from that day on, I changed what I thought about him. I changed from being a dutiful wife to being afraid of him and not trusting him at all. But I began talking about when I was going to go on the railroad. Now what the railroad was, actually, was some good people who would hide you in the day, and at night you would run. And you would run Sometimes through waters, you would run in ways that the dog could not pick up your scent. Because once a group of slaves ran, they would send dogs after them. And if they found a slave, they would either beat him to death or come back and hang him in front of the other slaves to show, this is what will happen to you if you run away. So, I was not going to be caught. Well, my brothers knew that I was thinking about this, and they knew about my husband and what he thought. So they said, Harriet, and they called me Hat. They said, Hat, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go with you. And I said, okay. So one night we decided we're going to go. And I got up in the middle of the night, and I took a handkerchief with some salt pork and a couple pieces of bread to keep me for a couple days. And I took off, and I met my brothers. Well, here's what my brothers did. How many of you have a brother? Well, this is what my brother did. Hi, Keith. Hi, Daniel. Here's what my brother did. We were out there, and the first noise we heard, he said, It's the dogs! They're coming after us, Hat! And I said, shh, keep it down. And we got about 2 miles, and all of a sudden, they just freaked out. They were nervous and scared and talking and saying, oh, Harry, they're going to find us, they're going to find us. I said, that's it, we're going back. So we went back, and I said, next time, I may not take you with me. So they went back to their quarters, to their houses, and I went back to my bed, got in bed underneath this quilt with John Tubb. 3 nights later, I got up, and I did not tell my brothers this time about it. And I got up, and it was a hot night, so we had just a little sheet over us. We didn't have the quilt on us. And I saw this quilt, and I thought, if I'm going to buy my freedom, I'm going to want to give something to someone, because this is the greatest possession I ever had. So I picked up this quilt, and I took it with me. So I left with this quilt, and I left with just a little bag of food. Now, while I was working in the field with my daddy, there was a woman that kept coming by, and she kept looking at me. Because my forehead had this huge scar on it, and many times, I would just fall asleep. I guess you have a name for it today, I don't know what it is, but anyway, highfalutin name. Sometimes I would just fall asleep and then wake back up. Well, she stopped one time and she said, are you the woman they call Harriet? And I said, yes, I am, ma'am. And she said, well, I want to tell you where I live, Harriet. And she got down on the ground and she drew a map. Now, I had never had a white woman pay so much attention to me. And she drew a map so I knew exactly, you go here to this hollow, and then you go over here to this big oak tree, and then you go across here, and I'm going to leave a light in the window for you. That was the oddest thing that she was telling me about a light in the window. Well, she was part of the Underground Railroad, and she wanted me to know. Sometimes we took kids like Daniel, and I had to give just a bit of my whiskey to keep quiet. We needed to be quiet, just listen. So that's okay. That's okay. Daniel's a part of the story. So I got up in the middle of the night. I took my quilt, and I worked my way through the hall. It was raining that night, and I got to this light in the window. Bye, Daniel. Got to this light in this window. Sometimes kids like that were a real pain on the Underground Road. But I got to the light in the window, and I knocked on the door. She came to the door, and she says, who is it? And I said, it's Harriet Tubman. She opened the door, and she said, it's about time, Harriet. She said, welcome to the Underground Railroad. I said, this is the Underground Railroad? She said, yes. And then she did the strangest thing. She took me in. She made me a breakfast like I'd never had, and I sat down at a table. I can count in my hand the times I sat down at a table to eat a meal. She made me bacon and eggs, and she said, now listen, Harriet, you go to sleep in my bed over there, and when it's evening time for you to go again, I'll wake you up. I was astonished. A white woman's going to let me sleep in her bed? So I did. And when I left the next morning, I said to her, ma'am, I want to give you this quilt. This is the quilt that I made for my husband. But this is the greatest possession I ever had, and I want to thank you because you're giving me my freedom. So I did. And she put it on her quilt. She put it on her bed. So I went running that night. I could tell you stories from now until supper about the Underground Railroad. We don't have that time. I made 19 trips in all. Over 300 slaves I freed. And what I would do is I would head to Philadelphia, because Philadelphia is where we were free. And when I got to Philadelphia the first time, I put my hand in the air and I said, "This is the hand of a free woman." And I saw lights coming through it and I said, "Dear God, thank you so much that you brought me this far, but this is the hand now of a free woman." Well, there was a place in Philadelphia, a seminary, where they trained preachers. And at night, I would work sometimes 15 hours in washing dishes, whatever work I could find, washing dishes. Then I would go to the stairs of the seminary, and I would go up the sides of them, and there was a group of four or five of us. And that was the Underground Railroad. That's how we formed this little tiny office, just five people. So this is a lesson for you. When you think there's just a few people coming, we're not going to do anything significant. You think about the Underground Railroad, that it freed 300 slaves from a little office with five people. Well, I went back one time to get my husband, because I still loved him. I still had a place in my heart. He was my husband, and I'd taken his quilt after all. So I went down to see him, and the way they knew I was there is I would sing the song, "Go Down Moses," until the Jim Crow laws came, and then I couldn't sing that song anymore because they thought that incited slaves to get free. So I would make the sound of a whippoorwill. I would just make the sound like a whippoorwill, and they would know it was Harriet. But after about five or six trips, they began to call me Moses because I helped get the people free. And they said, "Couldn't be a woman. A woman's not that smart." Well, I was certainly a woman, but I went to wearing pants after a while because running in this 5 yards of fabric was not the easiest thing. There were some times I would have to hide people in potato bins for 2 days. There were some times I would go into an attic of a Quaker's house. There were times when I would hide in the swamp, in blackberry brambles. I would get all cut up. Most of us didn't have shoes. We would run with sometimes rags around our feet, or sometimes one of us would have a pair of shoes and we would share. I'd get one left foot, one left shoe one day, the next day I'd get a right shoe. It was crazy, but I went after my husband. And I got down to his door, and I knocked on the door, and I said, "John Tubman?" He said, "Who is that?" And he came out and opened the door. He said, "Harriet Tubman, I haven't seen you in 2 years. I said, "Well, I'll come after you, John." He said, "We don't want to go." And I looked in, and next to the fire was a lovely young woman, a black woman. He'd taken himself a new wife. Even gone. Well, this just shows the power of God, because instantly in my heart I forgave him. And I said, "Well then, John Tubman, I'm going to take you and your new wife to freedom." He said, "You go on, Harry. We don't want any part." And then they laughed at me. Close the door. I tell you what, I've had my body beaten until I was just, there was blood streaming. I had been stoned. I'd been spit on. But I never had that happen to me. My own husband turned me away and break my heart. So from then on, I promised God, "Dear God, I don't have a husband anymore. I've just got you. And what I'm going to do, God, you and I together, we're going to get as many slaves free as we possibly can." And that's what I did. One time I came after my parents, because I love my parents. And they were in their 70s, and now a lot of folks in their 70s can do a lot of things, but they couldn't run 1,000 miles, I tell you what. So I decided I'd made a lot of friends by then. Like the woman who had this quilt in her bed, we became fast friends. And so I got a buggy and I got some horses, two old horses. And I went to pick up my parents. I dressed up like an old lady. I put on a handkerchief, and I walked like an old person might walk. And I got my parents and put them on the cart. In the back of the cart, I put some chickens. And they were squawking and moving and just doing what chickens do, you know? And so there were three old black folks on this carriage. No one knew we were really on the Underground Railroad. It was a great scheme, and we got by. And here's what. I saw one of the men from the Brodus plantation walked right in front of the cart. He didn't recognize me. I felt very clever. Well, as time went by, people began to know that I was the reason the Underground Railroad was working. And so they gave out a reward, and I saw it on trees. I'd walk by and they would say, "Reward for Harriet Tubman, dead or alive, $40,000. Now, $40,000 a day is not that much money. But back when I was alive, it would be like $1 million. Bounty on my head. I thought, well, I'm pretty important if they're going to pay $40,000 for me. Well, I can't tell you all the stories. I'll just tell you this. Pretty soon, the war broke out, the Civil War. And I was a valued spy because I knew the back roads so well. And what they would have me do is go ahead and scout and be a spy. I also acted as a nurse. And you know about Abraham Lincoln. He was a good man who thought slavery was not only wrong for slaves, but it was also wrong for the white owners. It wasn't good for their souls either. So he was against it. I got to tell you one more story. I forgot this one. One time there was a man, and there were a lot of really strong men, but this one man was belly aching like my brother's, and he was saying, oh, Herod, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten for 3 days. I can't do this. It was better being a slave, Herod. I want to go back. Now, I never did this before, but I took the pistol out of my pocket, and I said, listen, friend, you go back, and I got to shoot you. Because you would tell all the people on the Underground Railroad, and you would tell all our hiding places, and we just couldn't have that, could we? He had a change of heart right quick. So I put that gun back in my pocket, and I was telling you about Abraham Lincoln. But before Abraham Lincoln came along, they said to me, Harriet, I think it's time for you to go to Boston. The big city, Boston. I even got to ride in a train. And they said, yeah, you go to Boston, and I want you to talk about it at some churches. So there were some churches a little bit like Holden Village that were thinking ahead of their times. And they said, you go and talk about it. So one day I was at Faneuil Hall. Have you ever been to Faneuil Hall, anyone here? Alrighty, some folks have traveled the world. Well, I was at Faneuil Hall, and I stood up and I started talking. They said, tell us some stories, Harriet. There were more white people than I'd ever seen in my life in this hall. And I was with all white men up on the stage. And I stood up, I was wearing this dress. And I stood up and I said, well, there's the story about the twins, the baby twins and the nursing mom I took. And I just began telling stories and I talked about how I used my whiskey to help those babies sometimes be quiet. And I got telling and telling, and pretty soon, I guess a lot of time had passed. I said, I've told enough stories, and I sat down. Well, the moment I sat down, those white folks began whooping and hollering and stamping their feet and clapping. I guess I'd done pretty good. And they said, Harriet, we're going to go with you and help raise some money for the Underground Railroad. And I was very happy to do that. So we did that. Okay, back to history. November 1860, Abraham Lincoln was elected. And soon several states left over slavery. And in 1861, the Civil War began, and then the Emancipation Proclamation was signed that made us all free, and then a great thing happened. I was up in Boston, and they were sending down ships to get slaves free, because even though our president had signed the Emancipation Proclamation, there were people that said, you're not taking those slaves, because they're the way that we make money. We're not going to give them up, and so we had to make them give them up. So we went down with ships, and we went to plantations and said, get on board, you're free now. Well, the slaves were afraid of the white soldiers. They wouldn't get on board. But when they had me on board, Moses, they'd get on board. One time, we got 800 slaves free in one boatload. And I thought about the 19 trips I had made through the mud and the snow and the rain and the blisters and all the problems we saw, but I never lost one passenger on the railroad, not one. And I thought, these boats are a much better way to go. So we took 800 to their freedom. Well, my mom and pa, they got free. And I took them up north. Pretty soon, Philadelphia wasn't south enough. We had to go up to Canada sometimes. But in Auburn, New York, I bought my parents a house. And they could live their 3 days out in this house. So I went to the senator owned the house, and he was selling it, and I said, sir, I'd like to buy this house from you. He said, Harriet Tubman, someday you're going to be more famous than I am. I said, how can that be? You are a white man, and you are a senator of our United States. He said, I don't care, someday you're going to be more famous. forgotten what his name is exactly, but I guess some people do know about me today. But I bought the house, and my parents live there. And in 1903, I gave this house to the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church for freed slaves that come. And the day I died, I still went out. And I sold some vegetables to make it easier for some new freed slaves. I live my life as a very blessed life. I was born a barefoot slave girl. But by God's grace, I died a free woman. The end.
If you have any questions that you want to ask us and about Harriet or Mindy, we'll be happy to answer them in first person if you like. Yes?
How old was she when she died?
She was, let me check that, because I've done so many women this week, I'm a little bit confused about which woman I am today. I'm having a little multi-personality disorder here. So, here, I think it is 83, but let me just check. Uh-huh. 93. I was 93.
Wow.
90. Can you imagine that life?
Yeah.
And die at 93?
Yeah. How were you funded when you were, how did you support yourself when you were funded?
Well, when I was making the 19 trips, I had a day job and sometimes two jobs. I would wash dishes, I would clean houses, I would do whatever I could. And then we on the Underground Railroad would use our money. Along with some people, some forward-thinking Christian people, Quakers and Congregationalists primarily. There was one man, Mr. Garrett, who was in Philadelphia, that if a slave that was freed got to his cobbler shop, he would make him a new pair of shoes.
Wow.
And we'd never had a new pair of shoes. So it was by donations, and all the money I earned, I just ate, got by eating as little as I could so I could make another trip. So people would hand me sometimes a dollar, which was a lot of money back then. So I would just raise money, and it was called the Vigilance Society. That was the Underground Railroad. And the Vigilance Society would hand me sometimes as much as $20 to make the trip down and back with lots of people.
Yes. I might miss this when I was out of the room. When you said trips, did you take them the whole way?
I did. I would usually, at first it was Philadelphia, and I went down to Maryland. I went down primarily to the plantation I was from and the neighboring ones, because I knew that. Mm-hmm. And I'd done the first trip. And once you've been under a railroad, it became much easier. If I would have gone to places I didn't know, I wouldn't know the places to hide, the houses to go to, that sort of thing. But I would go down and I would take them north. The first time was Philadelphia, and then it got further north in Pennsylvania, and then New York, and two times I went all the way to Canada because it wasn't safe to go. And Auburn, New York, where my parents lived, was very northern New York. But I took them the whole way. I made sure that they had a place to stay.
Yes. You kept going back to the same area.
Right.
Didn't the white people, after 15 trips, didn't they kind of get a little glimmer that maybe you might come back?
Sometimes the white folks weren't that smart. And I was rather clever, and I had some good help. For instance, one time, I mean, they were clever, and it was for them, they're called by God to help us get free. If they were caught, they could be killed, or they could be fined hundreds of dollars. One time a man put me in the middle of his cart, and he put vegetables all around me, and so I was sitting next to a pumpkin, and then he put an old quilt on top of me. It looked like vegetables going to town, and I was hiding in there. And I got to go 14 miles on that cart. It was great. But incredibly clever how people would hide you. Yes, there was a glimmer, but I never got caught, or any of my parcels. That's what we called the folks, parcels. Go ahead,
Minnie. Did you ever get married again, or how many children?
I was married to God.
How did the people support themselves after they got married? Did you help them find jobs?
Sometimes folks in the Underground Railroad would help them. The Congregationalists and Quakers were our biggest supporters, and they would hire us to do anything, you know, even if they didn't need the help. And that's how, you know, we did housework, we did work no one else wanted to do. hard labor a lot of times. Yes, Nancy.
How many parcels would you take at a time?
Usually between 7 to 15.
Wasn't that hard to move?
It was very hard to move. It was very hard to move. Well, if you think 19, I'm not so good at my figuring, so you do this. 19 goes into 30 how many times?
Even.
No, what I meant was, how many, if I took 300 people and 19 trips, what's that?
You meant 300,
not 30.
You said
19. I'm sorry, I meant 300. 19 goes to 300.
Close to 15.
So the average size was 15. And I didn't take children a lot, because children, I love children, but they couldn't usually be quiet. And sometimes we had to hide in trees, in blackberry brambles, in marshes. We did a lot of water, because you can't pick up a scent in water. So the places that we stayed were ingenious. Maybe you visited places in the Midwest or the South where they hid us. Have you ever been to a house that shows a wall that goes away? Sometime when you're traveling Ohio, there's lots of them. And then in the South, they would build houses that they would have rooms that were hidden. And that's sometimes where we would go. But root cellars, and, you know, anywhere. I was a little woman, and I stayed little for one good reason. And that is because you could hide better when you're little.
Yes. Yeah, but the song Wade in the Water is the song that emerged out of the
That's right. Most of the African American spirituals, Wade in the Water, Go Down Moses, the ones that we sing in church today, were from the Underground Railroad. And that was just, they felt like they were just like the leaving Pharaoh. And God kept us going. We didn't have food. We didn't have shelter, but we had God. And that was the common denominator that kept us together. Yes.
Did you always go about the same time of year?
No, different times. Winter was easier because there weren't as many people out. And it was colder, but it was there were less people, and you couldn't get caught as easily.
Yes. How long would the trip take?
The trip took, I got faster, but the trip took about 2 months.
That's true.
So
yes.
You did 19 trips in how many years? 3 years or something?
This is a guess. I think it was over about 20 years time that I did. No, that's wrong. I averaged in the beginning one trip a year because it took me so long to make enough money to have the money to go back and do what I needed to do. And then it was two and sometimes I did three trips. So it would be more like 10 or 12 years.
So 1855 or something.
Right. And part of the reason I don't know that is because there's Harriet Tubman is all oral history. She wasn't like Eleanor Roosevelt that we have 15, 20, 30 books about. Harriet was all verbal because no one knew. And did you know that they wouldn't let slaves read, so they had quilts. And these were the maps. And they would quilt the maps. And people thought, the white folks thought, boy, those slaves really like quilts. And we were just studying the map.
Yeah.
And so they would take quilts with them, which was the map, and they never knew. There's a new book I have with me this time. It's called Hidden in Plain View, about a woman getting her doctoral, going back and hearing about the quilts and the maps. Mm. That's amazing. What, yes, Mary?
I would like to share a book I picked up at the service last night. It's called Thus This Far by Faith. It's a hymnal. It's for the African American hymnal. I have not seen this. It came out in 1992. And it gives you the history of the black, of what you're saying in terms of music and worship. And I just wanted to share this little paragraph because it just backs up just what you said.
Thank you.
It said, not only were slaves discouraged from reading the Bible, it was actually illegal for slaves to read. This enforced illiteracy compelled many slaves in their pregnancy to rely on memory for biblical stories.
Spirituals and hymns were an important aid to memory, and they often conflated or blended biblical narratives. The value of oral tradition among the people, however, helped carry on the living voice of the gospel. And that's what you were saying, that she probably didn't. Did she know how to read? She didn't know how to read.
No.
They didn't want you to read.
I could read my name.
Yeah.
And that's how I knew that I would see the post.
No, this came out by ELCA back in 1990. Just 2 years ago. I'm familiar with this. I don't know if we use this up here or not.
How lovely.
It's
Thank
a wonderful
so much.
Book. It's a wonderful book. I don't know how many years. I'm going to take this back. If anybody wants, I've read it. If anybody wants it, as long as you promise to take it back to the
Go ahead, I'll take it. I promise I will.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. One more question, dear. Yes.
What hit her head again?
What hit her head? A weight, a 2-pound weight. And she, if you look at any pictures, there's only two that I've found in all my research. There's very few about both Harriet and Sojourner. But you can see the scar was there. Her head was just indented. I have one more postcard of her up in my room I forgot to bring down. But it's sent next to a man, and she's just teeny. Just this teeny little woman. So, you know, go figure. God's going to use what God's going to use. Mm-hmm. This little black woman, frail, who fell asleep. Narcolepsy is what they call it. Yes, Nancy.
So she herself escorted about 300 people. Do you know how many people total?
I've heard estimations, but they really are estimations. She did a huge portion, by far more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she's called the conductor on the Edinburgh Road. But you know, the kids in this room are educated about Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman, but we weren't, you know, in our day, it wasn't studied. So my own brother, whom I adore, and is a very thoughtful, bright man, said to me, what is the Underground Railroad, Catherine? He did not know. Well, a grown, 50-year-old man didn't know what it was. So these, in my opinion, are some of the great people in history. And not that George Washington wasn't great, but I would stand her next to George Washington any day in terms of courage and integrity and, you know, being brave for what was important. Thank you for coming. Tomorrow you'll get to hear Florence Nightingale.